Free agency is rapidly approaching. The NFL scouting combine is in the books, and the whispers and rumors were flowing. Yahoo's senior NFL reporter Joy Epstein joins me to talk through everything she's hearing from sources as we head into free agency. What's Justin Fields' market? How does the league view Russell Wilson and the running back position? Will this be a better market for those guys than it was last year? All that and more coming up on the show. Let's get into it. It's Thursday, March 7th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is, first time on this show, Yahoo's very own senior NFL reporter, Jory Epstein. Jory, what's going on?
Matt, it's awesome to be on. Y'all crush it on this show, and I'm doing well. I was at the Combine last week. I was talking to a couple sources on Monday, and they're like, sorry, still recovering, and I'm like, yeah, if you took a day to recover, like, God bless you. It takes me a week to recover from the combine.
I think I may have said this on the show, and maybe this is just my general plea to our bosses, to our wonderful bosses, wonderful executives who do great work and I value very much. I have never been to the combine. This year, I couldn't go for personal reasons. I definitely couldn't have made it, but I hear all of you, like, all you people that do the Super Bowl to combine, like how much that takes off your body. And I'm like, man, I'm ready. I'm ready for that. I've never been to the combine. I'm like dying to go, especially if the indie years are waning. So I'm very jealous of your combine experience.
Okay. Yeah. We definitely need to get you there next year. I was actually expecting you to be there. So yes, totally agree. But yeah, I mean, again, such like a first world problem. So grateful for the opportunities, but it's more like the playoff to Senior Bowl to Super Bowl to combine. It's like that whole stretch. I haven't had a calendar week home yet this year. So it is special, but no, I mean, it's awesome. It's, I always tell my friends who like don't really understand why I need to be at the combine when I do so much more league news than I do prospects. And I'm like, it's the biggest football conference of the year. Running into sources, I'm a big believer if I never go work in the media workroom, I do all of my work in hotel lobbies, and I get like very territorial about having the exact chair in between the entrance and the elevators up to the rooms so that no one from the team staying at the hotel can get to their room without passing by me first. It's a whole thing.
See, that's why you're good at what you do. You've got a strategy. you've got an approach to this thing, and that is why I really wanted to have you specifically on this show, Jory, because on Tuesday, played a little matchmaking with the free agency. Today, we're going to dive into kind of more substantial conversations around free agents, around just like, we're calling this show off-season combine free agent rumors and whispers. We want to dive in with you, Jory, what you're hearing from your sources, what like kind of the big talking points around the league are right now as we head into, we come out of combine week, which like you said, definitely from a fantasy perspective, people want to talk about prospects and what these guys are doing on the workouts and all that. And I'm actually interested to hear how many people you talk to that don't even care about the combine results. I'm curious about that, but like that's mainly the focus. But like you said, so much of what actually happens in Indy is the rumor mongering and like GMs kind of giving you some clues via press conferences and talking to sources. And then obviously we have free agency and the legal tampering period next week. So this is a huge time, Jory, for NFL news, and we're going to learn a lot about these teams and the way they think, both last week and going into next week.
Absolutely. No, I think I'm excited, and it's kind of a funny thing where, like, so much of networking at these events is you want to be having conversations as naturally as possible, but also remembering everything everyone tells you so you can go back and report it to the degree that's appropriate. Yeah. And so I got to the point last week where I had like a note stock on my phone that is called Combine Notebook. And every time someone loved it, I'd be like, okay, person's name, here's what I learned from them. And a lot of it is not going to be like this person from this team said this, but I do feel like I've got like some rumblings to share. So this is perfect.
Perfect. This is awesome. Well, then let's just dive into quarterbacks because like, of course, we got to talk quarterbacks. And I know you have a couple notes on different quarterback philosophies that you've been talking with teams about here. And this is a critical point. Just kind of the starting point of the offseason, because we'll talk about both prospects and big name veteran quarterbacks that are available. But like to me, Jory, and again, I'm interested to hear what your notes are on this. To me, how you approach quarterback and like how your quarterback situation ends up evolving, whether you take one of these big name veterans or you go the rookie route, everything else sort of kind of trickles down from there.
It's so true. And I actually think that the conversation I was having with an assistant coach from a team last week is really relevant to what you're doing on this show, because basically this is an assistant who works for a team that drafted a quarterback last year. And he was taking me through and he said, look, when we were having these conversations about who we wanted to draft and when we wanted to draft them, the big question that we kept coming back to is, do we want a quarterback centric offense or a quarterback friendly offense, which sounds similar, but his whole idea is, how much are you depending on the quarterback in two ways that I'll get to in a moment to run your offense? One, are you depending on a quarterback physically to just totally go and make the game plays, make the plays forever and around him? And two, how much are you giving him at the line of scrimmage to have to diagnose? And so it's sort of like some quarterbacks, and again, Brock Purdy is doing a great job of running the offense that he's running. And I think if you were to say that he's in a quarterback friendly system, then he is at the high end of being able to operate that quarterback friendly system. But I think it's so interesting to consider, what does a team want? How does that fit into their scheme? How does it fit into the rest of the personnel they have? Because if you don't have protection for the guys, if you don't have pass catchers, if you don't have the right play caller, like, how much can you really do? And then what do you want from the quarterback? And I'm so curious your thoughts on that, particularly with the quarterbacks coming out of this class, because I think for your listeners, for the fantasy, I mean, that's so relevant. The quarterback friendly guys, are they going to get the same numbers in fantasy as the quarterback centric guys? I don't know.
Well, and a perfect team, I think, to use that example with is the Atlanta Falcons, because on the matchmaking show earlier in the week, Tara and I both matched Kirk Cousins with the Falcons, because that seems to sort of kind of be the way things are going. But like, Kirk Cousins is probably the only guy, at least in my opinion, available on the open market that you can not just run a quarterback friendly offense with. Like, you can run maybe a bit more of a quarterback centric offense. And by the way, this is a beautiful part about like watching players throughout the course of their career. I would not have said that about Kirk Cousins 8 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever. Like, I thought he had to be in that quarterback friendly offense, but I think because of how much he has seen and how he has evolved, and also the way that him and Kevin O'Connell worked together. And I'm definitely, again, we'll talk Kirk Cousins more specifically in a second, but like, I think that marriage and that bond really allowed Kirk to control more things on the field than maybe he had previously in his career. So like I said, using that as an example, the Falcons, right? Like, if they get a quarterback, like Kirk Cousins, I'm definitely much more interested in like the statistical output of a guy like Drake London, or, you know, maybe a Kyle Pitts, or even down into the run game, because I think everything will just flow so much better. But the reality is, like I said, there's only one Kirk Cousins. Not everybody's like, not multiple teams are going to end up with Kirk Cousins or a Kirk Cousins level quarterback. So then, as an offensive play caller, as an offensive coach, like Zach Robinson, is the first time you're doing this, say in 2 weeks, Kirk Cousins is back in Minnesota, Kirk Cousins on another roster. Like, how do you change your plan offensively to then go to probably more of a quarterback friendly offense, because you are likely looking at not even tier one, like a Caleb Williams type. You're looking at maybe that next tier down of rookie quarterbacks.
Yeah, you make such great points, because I think what you're telling us is that the difference in a quarterback-centric offense versus a quarterback-friendly offense doesn't necessarily speak to how much a quarterback is relying on his skill players. It's really, the skill players could still go off. It's that the quarterback would be processing more and kind of like doing more to set them up on the front end. And I think what you're saying about wanting to plan for it, if you're Zach Robinson, if you're sort of the coaches who are in charge of making this thing run, is why when free agency opens in just a few days, we want to get things rolling. And I know we're going to get to Russell Wilson, but I think that that's something that really stuck out to me when I was researching about Russ this week, is when the Broncos announced more formally, although I think we've all known it for months, that they were going to be releasing Russ next week. I asked a bunch of my sources around the league, so that's quarterback agents and people in front offices, and I said, where do you think he's going to land? And it wasn't like, what are you hearing, so much as, based on your experience in negotiating quarterback deals on either end and understanding what teams and players want, where do you think would be a good fit? And something that stuck out was, a lot of people were telling me, as important as where he goes is when he goes there. Because if you have a team that believes in him as a starter and believes they want to run their offense around him and get him with their skill players, they're going to get him in next week. They're going to get him in right away. If this is a team that's more like, well, let's see what we get in the draft, like, maybe we'll pair him with a younger guy, maybe we'll pair him with someone who like we believe in. But I mean, even I had one team be like, what would he be like if he goes to the Jets? Like, clearly they need to upgrade from Zach Wilson at backup quarterback, but obviously he's not the presumed starter there. And so I think you have sort of this interesting situation where, based on when a guy signs, we also understand like what a team is going to be doing to prepare him.
Okay, let's talk about some of these players specifically, because I think this will just expand our conversation here generally about like quarterback centric, quarterback friendly. And the big name quarterbacks that are available that are veterans, we all know, like Kirk Cousins, Baker Mayfield, Russell Wilson. And let's start specifically keep talking about Russ, because I know you've done some reporting on Russ specifically, and you've written about this for the website recently. So I'm just fascinated when you talk to people about Russell Wilson, where is he kind of like, actually, before we talk about him and where he's going, I actually want to spin back to Denver for a second. And like,
yeah. Can you help them, Matt?
I was going to ask you, can you help me understand what is going on in Denver? Like, what is the plan for this team? I've heard that like they only have, I think, a small handful of players even under contract for 2025, which just shows you that there's not a lot of long-term players on this roster. They released Justin Simmons, who is an former all-pro safety, today before we recorded this. Like, just simple question, Jory, what are the Denver Broncos?
The Denver Broncos, I'm trying to decide how to say this nicely, but I don't know that there is. They are a reflection of what Sean Payton wants to believe about himself, I think is like the most accurate way to say it. Like, I think that had Sean been there when the Russ deal was done, he wouldn't have been able to make this move. But he's so able to be like, you guys did this before I got here, and I don't agree with that. And so he's making all these moves accordingly. Now, how he's going to fix it, I don't know, because I think at some point, again, we talk about this with head coaches, we talk about this with quarterbacks. If you're going to replace your guy, you better have a plan in place. Now, I'm not saying you never have to rebuild, but you should know how you're going to rebuild. And do you really think like a late first round quarterback, or even a mid first round quarterback, which, by the way, you don't have a whole lot of assets because you traded away picks to get Russ and to get Sean Payton, do you really think that you're going to be able to get the guy in there? I mean, I cannot even imagine them being competitive in the next 3 years. It would be super fun if they prove us wrong. I know that Sean's a really good coach. I do believe in him as like a scheme guy, but also he didn't find Drew Brees. Now, I give him a lot of credit for what Drew Brees did, and obviously I give Drew Brees credit too, but he didn't draft the guy, even if he acquired him. So it's not like he evaluated him out of college. Why are we so sure that Sean Payton, who didn't find Drew Brees' successor, by the way, and then when he didn't have Drew Brees' successor, he just was like, all right, I'm out.
I'm out of here.
And if I'm coming back, it's not with you guys. Like, why are we so sure that he's going to have that plan? So I think that if I'm George Payton, I'm concerned. If I'm a Broncos fan, I'm concerned. If I'm a guy in the locker room, I'm concerned, because I don't know what their plan is.
Like, not only do they not have draft capital because of the Russell Wilson trade and the Sean Payton trade, the first move that Sean Payton makes as a draft pick was Marvin Mims, a receiver that he traded up for, and who was terrible as a rookie. And I mean, I don't say this lightly. He was a great kick returner, Pro Bowl kick returner, I believe, but he was non-functional.
That's what you trade up for, right?
Yeah, part of me, because you're so right that the Denver Broncos are just like whatever Sean Payton wants them to be. Like, it's a thing built in his image. Like, it's a really an exercise in his ego, and like, he deserves to have an ego, because the reason that they're not picking you don't think he deserves to have an ego.
I have like this strong belief that no one deserves to have an ego. Like, I remember I had in college, I had all these awesome professors, and then I had one professor, I probably shouldn't say what he taught because of what I'm about to say, who was like so arrogant, like the only professor I didn't build a relationship with. And I remember telling one of my friends, like, I'm learning a lot, but like, I don't understand why he's not personable at all. Like, he's here to teach us and like have office hours and all that. And my friend goes, well, he's earned the right to have an ego. And I'm like, I just don't believe, like, what does anyone gain by having an ego? You're not going to be a better coach. You're not going to be a better team builder. You're not going to be a better person. I'm not saying that he hasn't earned the credibility to make some of the decisions, but I know there are people who believe that, and I don't think I'm ever going to.
Listen, we could definitely go down the philosophical rabbit hole of who deserves to have an ego or who deserves to feel that way about themselves. Shoot, we can have like we could probably do a 2-hour podcast on like who deserves to have an ego in the media, in our business, beyond just talking about like beyond just talking about teams and players and coaches and all that stuff. But I guess to the point is, like, he has the resume as an offensive designer to think that he can do this, right? Like,
I'll give you that.
But how far are we going to push this thing here? Because to me, like I'm with you. I don't know what the plan is. I can't see them being competitive, but I can see them being baseline NFL functional because Payton is a good coach, which almost makes things worse, because then you get like the 12th overall pick. You consistently pick a little bit too too high in the or too low in the draft in the first round to get one of these top end quarterback prospects unless you're going to sell the farm for them, which they now can't do because they traded for you. They traded for you, Sean Payton. So I said on the matchmaking show that I see this as a team that has like a weird quarterback competition of like Sam Darnold and Jameis Winston, you know, something like that. And again, it's just Sean Payton's just is just out here exercising that ego. And again, to the receiver point, Marvin Mims, non-functional as an NFL route runner in year one. Like that's just where it was. But then there's all these rumors still, and there has been for years, that they want to trade Jerry Jeudy, who has been a disappointment for them. You know, Courtland Sutton had a great year last year, but is he still getting trade rumors? So again, I just have no idea. I think they're one of the more fascinating teams this offseason. I feel like listeners probably don't agree. They're like, why would I care about the Denver Broncos? But because of the Russell Wilson fallout and because there's just such a blank slate here, I do feel like they are a very fascinating team to track this offseason.
Yeah. So as you know, like I came up in this league through the lens of covering the Cowboys. And so I think of Sean Payton and the Cowboys have some similarities in just what I expect out of them. And it's interesting because I like totally expect them to be like a below average team, but like beat Patrick Mahomes and beat Jim Harbaugh at least once each, and then like be on their high horses because of it. That's like so a Cowboys thing to do, like lose games they shouldn't lose, but then win one really tough game and be like, well, now we got it. And I remember a couple of years ago, I went to Minnesota right when they brought in Kwesi Adofo-Mensah as their general manager. And we were having this conversation about his philosophy on championship caliber talent. And he was saying like, basically one of the worst things you can do in this league is convince yourself you have the caliber of talent to go win when you don't have that caliber. Like you got to be realistic about how many Pro Bowlers do you need at each position. Like, what do you really need? Like, are you above that threshold or are you below that threshold of championship caliber talent? And I feel like no one's going to think the Broncos have everything they need, but I feel like if they get hot for a little bit, they're going to delude themselves into thinking they're closer than they are. And not only do you have a lot of question marks, you also have Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and Andy Reid and Jim Harbaugh in your division. So it's not going to get easier. Like, again, one more note on the Cowboys on that front is I was talking to a coach about like, what do you make of the Cowboys being 12-5 the last couple of years, but then also not making the playoffs. And one of the coaches, he was an assistant in the AFC North. Let's leave it at that. And he goes, if I played the Commanders and the Giants twice a year, every year, I could also go from like 12 wins. And so it's sort of like, are you a 9-win team or are you a 12-win team? And so it's just interesting when you think about like what it actually takes to get over the hump.
That's a great point. And I mean, that's, I said on our, a couple shows ago, it's like, from a fantasy perspective, the fact that they made no changes in the coaching staff, the Cowboys, it's like, this is great because I don't care about what they do in December or September. Well, I don't care about December, like at least the end of it. I don't certainly don't care about January. They're not making it to February. I don't care about any of that. I want them to beat the crap out of like the Commanders a few times, beat around the Giants, get those skill position numbers up. That's all that matters for the selfish fantasy folks. Back to Russell Wilson and these veteran quarterbacks. Actually, as we're recording, Gary Dulac, who's covered the Steelers forever, reports that the Steelers are interested in signing Russell Wilson and are tentatively planning to meet with the former Broncos quarterback before the start of free agency. According to sources, Wilson has interest in joining the Steelers. He says, story forthcoming on the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Again, Dulac's covered the Steelers forever. So I'm just, again, that landing spot does sort of make sense to me. I think they definitely need real veteran competition for Kenny Pickett. I think Russell Wilson is in the phase. This is my opinion. Again, I'm curious what your sources have said on this. I think Russell is in the phase where he can't be sold as just a clear-cut starter. Like, he needs to compete for that job. He needs to maybe just be a bridge to the next thing. In Pittsburgh, he would be a competition-level player. I don't think he fits Arthur Smith's offense at all, but that's another conversation. So, again, your sources, kind of what are they telling you in terms of what's like what level is Russell Wilson at this point?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting based on this move. Is Arthur Smith calling the shots? Is Mike Tomlin calling the shots? Is Omar Khan calling the shots? I agree with you. I don't think he's a good fit for Arthur Smith's offense, and I don't think he's what Arthur Smith is looking for. I think, to me, I really believe that Russ would be better off in a competition with a like mid to late first round draft pick. And so you like give him a little bit of time. I think that if you're Russ, what I was hearing from all these quarterback agents who have dealt with guys with similar at similar stages of their career is you are going to prioritize the clearest path to starting and to getting your opportunity. This isn't about money, because we all know like Russ is already getting the money from Denver. He's going to have like $1.2 million offsetting it from whichever team he gets, which also makes him way more attractive than if he were actually commanding even like a mid-level veteran salary. But I think that if you're in Pittsburgh, I don't know that you're going to start. Like, if you're competing with Kenny Pickett, I think you're more likely to lose that early than if you're competing with the first rounder. Not because I think Kenny Pickett is better, but because he's already got the trust of so much of that staff. Even if he doesn't have Arthur Smith's trust, he has already got so many guys who want to make it work, who drafted him, and thus their jobs are more likely to be stable if they can make him work. And I think that when we look across the league at like the Aaron Rodgers, the Brock Purdy, even Lamar Jackson, so many of these guys who waited to start and who really, and Patrick Mahomes, obvious answer. I think that if you're Russ, you're not trying to find a place where you start for the next 3 years. You're trying to find a place where you could show, hey, I've got a lot left in the tank right now. Can I start as much of 2024 as possible, make it my job to lose? And I think somewhere like a Las Vegas, so it makes way more sense than a Pittsburgh. Now, it makes sense for them to do their due diligence, but yeah. I don't know. I don't think that that is where he lands.
Yeah, I've found it hard to pinpoint a spot for Russell. I do think Vegas makes some sense because I think then you can say, all right, our young guy that we're developing is still Aiden O'Connell. I think that's the guy that we're kind of hoping comes along behind Russ. Maybe if Russ flames out, we give O'Connell another look. We don't then have to draft a quarterback in the first round. But I said on the last pod, I was like, what about the Giants as a landing spot? Because they don't, you mentioned the money part, which I do think is crucial here. They don't, they are already paying Daniel Jones. And it, I'm, do you buy the narrative that like they already have buyer's remorse and they're already looking for like alternatives, or is this staff like pot committed with Daniel Jones? Cause I think that's a big part of it. Cause if I'm Brian Daboll, like I want somebody to push Daniel Jones. I don't think that's a rookie quarterback, because that doesn't really make sense at this point. So Russell comes in and can at least, I think it's probably too much drama, and I think it's probably too much of like a big personality thing that's going to come in there with Wilson to push Daniel Jones. But I don't know. I think that's an interesting one, just because you could sell to Russell Wilson like, hey, if you're better than this guy, like we don't care what we're paying him. You can start week one and hold this job all year.
Yeah, if I'm Brian Daboll, I do want that. I think his job's on the line this year, and he knows that, and he's got to make something happen. Even if you have the injuries last year, I still think there are going to be question marks about the way things went wrong and just sort of some of the question marks. I do think that that is not the worst spot for Russell from a culture standpoint. I'll get back to that in a second. I like that both of them are mobile. Like, I know they're not the exact same style of quarterback, but I do think that you can rely on them to sort of like create outside the pocket a little bit. I think that if you're Russ and you want to win and show what you have in the tank, like, who are you throwing the ball to and who is running the ball over there and who's protecting you? Like, I don't know if you're not making money, if it's not a money standpoint anyway, like, I don't know. If I were him, I'd be prioritizing offensive line as like one of my top three or five concerns, because if you don't have an offensive line, what are you really going to do? I think when you get into the locker room standpoint, that's why there's some chatter of like, oh, would Tampa try and use Russ as like almost like a negotiating tactic to get Baker to sign for less of like, hey, we don't need you. We want you. And so we've got Russ in the building now. If you want to play, like play for a better deal. And to me, that's the one where I'm like, Baker and Russ are on polar opposite stances of like the authenticity spectrum, in my opinion. Yes. And so it's like, I do not see that one working, but I think Daniel Jones is much more reserved and businesslike. And so I think that he and Russ would be fine.
I'll tell you a funny story off camera about Daniel Jones and being reserved, but we'll save that one for off the podcast. But
I look forward to it.
Anyways, I hear your point about Baker Mayfield and like how that would not make sense as a like a leverage point. But on Baker, moving to him, does he have like a real market outside of Tampa Bay, do you think? Or is this a guy that's just like, they sign Mike Evans, they bring him back, they sign him to a funny money deal, right? Where hey, big inside, you know, not throwing shade at your people here, the insiders, Joy, but it's like, hey, big insiders, report this as a 51 whatever million dollar deal. It's like, it's probably not really that much, but they get Mike Evans back. Is that enough to then pry Baker Mayfield back? And if they can't, like, do other teams see Baker Mayfield as a clear-cut starter, or is that only what he's viewed at in Tampa, or does Tampa not even view him that way?
I will go back to when I was at the Jets Bucks joint practices during training camp last year. And it's like, it was late August. I had already, this is like my 12th or 13th team I had visited. And they are the only team in the league at that point who had not declared a week one starter. It was like, I don't know. We still like Kyle Trask. And I think Mike Evans told me on the record, he's like, yeah, we got to know at some point. Like, it's time. Like, it's, we need to roll with one guy, even if we like them both. And so whether Baker's their clear-cut starter, he should be if he comes back.
Yeah.
I think if I'm another team, I'm looking at this and I'm like, can Baker stay healthy and can Baker do this without Dave Canales? I think the answer is pretty likely yes, but I want to see it for one more year. And so if I'm Baker, I'm also wondering, like, do I sign a one-year deal in Tampa, get a little more money, but a little less security, and bet on myself the way he did last year to show that, like, hey, I actually can stay healthy now. I figured out the routine that works for me. I also am like able to operate, and all the time I spent between all these different systems has elevated what I can do at the line of scrimmage, which he was always pretty good at. I think there's a lot of reasons why you should think of it that way. For sure, Mike Evans coming back helps. I don't think it's like a done deal, but I think that Baker has more value. And Tampa also, it's like, who are they going to get if not him? I think that they each have more value to each other than they do to anyone else.
I completely agree. And I just feel like that's got to happen. Like, that would just make sense if both parties return to each other and they keep this thing going for one more year or maybe two more years, something like that. On Kirk Cousins, before we move off the kind of veteran free agents, I'm less curious on what you're hearing about, you know, where he could end up or anything like that, because I do think it maybe comes down to Falcons and Vikings. But on the Vikings, if Kirk leaves or if he returns, like, how much do you think the front office and the coaching staff are on the same page about how they want to approach quarterback this year? Because the way I have the way it's been like told to me the way I understand it is that the coaching staff really wants to compete and they love working with Kirk Cousins, but the front office maybe, I think they're open to Kirk Cousins returning, but only at a certain price. And they see it as, we might be ready to get on that like rookie quarterback timeline, right? Which, by the way, is going to matter a whole ton to some of these offensive skill position players. Back to our conversation at the very top, because, well, if Kirk Cousins is going to elevate these guys in Atlanta, he's leaving behind the best receiver in football and Justin Jefferson, young upstart guy in Jordan Addison and T.J. Hockenson whenever he's healthy.
Yeah, I think that you have very much pegged what's going on there. I think Kevin O'Connell really wants him back. And I give Kevin O'Connell credit for a lot of reasons, including he said at the combine, he's like, we're not going to be the only team that wants Kirk. Like, he's realistic about it, but I think he's going to make his best pitch. They initially worked together some in Washington. They've worked really well together in Minnesota. Kevin is an awesome coach, but also his offense runs best when his quarterback can take on a lot at the line of scrimmage, and Kirk can take that on and thrive. And I mean, again, when Kirk got hurt last year, like leading up to that, he was playing one of the best of his career. And my thing with Kirk is, like, it's one thing if you have a quarterback who has struggled to stay healthy throughout his career. This is a guy who was like healthy for 8 straight starting seasons before this. Like, I trust him to get back. I'm not saying he's going to be 100% in September, but I really think that when you look at, like, okay, Dak had a bone through his ankle. Brock Purdy had his elbow screwed up in January 29th or something like that. Like, I don't worry about Kirk's health. I think that if you're the front office, your job is not to be very good. It's to go win a Super Bowl and to get the guys in there to win a Super Bowl. And again, I kind of think going back to the Denver conversation, there is some what you're hired to do and prove yourself with. Like, if you can find a quarterback and you can find him yourself, you're set as a GM. I mean, think about Tom Telesco getting a job as soon as he did. He had 10 years with the Chargers. He didn't do a whole lot, but he found Justin Herbert. Great. Raiders will take him. And so I think that similarly, Kwesi would probably love to get that quarterback in.
Yeah. Raising an eye on the Telesco Raiders thing. I've got one eyebrow raised on that one. Just kind of the idea, like, a lot of things went wrong, but he found Justin Herbert. But it's like, I don't know. We'll see if that can work out for the Raiders. Justin Fields, another veteran quarterback available. All the talk coming out of Indy, at least, you know, for the unfortunate ones of us sitting on our couch at home, not in Indianapolis.
We're getting you there next year, Matt. It's happening.
not those of us
Matt
fortunate
to Indy.
Yeah, Harmon to Indy, baby. Not those of us fortunate to be, you know, rubbing elbows with GMs at, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning at, you know, insert steakhouse here. Again, speaking just from the outsider's perspective, it sounded like all the talk coming out of Indy was that, yeah, actually, Justin Fields' market is not as hot as maybe people on the outside think. true, false, what are you hearing about Justin Fields and where he, when he could be traded and where he could be traded to?
Yeah, it's interesting. Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated had reported this week that the Bears were actually trying to get Caleb Williams in this week, like this past Tuesday, for his 30 visit. So they can basically know, like, hey, Caleb, who didn't do his medicals, and I know we're going to talk about that, at the combine, we feel set about him medically. We can do that, and we can try and get Justin out the door and see if we can recoup something for that. That didn't work out. Caleb and his team or family, depending who you ask to describe it, decided they'd wait until after the pro day. But I think that was something Chicago wanted. I think that the longer you wait with Justin, the more other teams are going to sort of get solid. I don't think he's going to be a starter this year, or at least not the starter that teams intend. What interests me is, I remember when I was talking to GMs and executives about the Lamar Jackson contract last year. And I'm like, I don't understand. This is a guy who, he was MVP then. We now see he's MVP again now. Why would more teams not be going for him? And I had one GM tell me, like, there's such a systematic investment you have to make in a quarterback like that, because he runs the system so differently that if we have a system right now, we're going to have to, like, retool what we're going for. I'm not saying I agree with that, but that's what the GM was telling me. So I think similarly, if you have front office people believing that, well, can you get Justin behind a guy who's already using his legs a lot? Can you get him to back up? Hey, Philly, Jalen Hurts had a little bit of a dip last year. Can he rebound? Mm-hmm. Can he not? And I don't think you need to change the offense between those two guys. Like, that would be interesting to me. Cleveland, Deshaun Watson, similarly, should be mobile. That's their vision for the offense. That's one of the reasons they changed offensive coordinator. Can you get Justin behind that? Because I don't know who's trusting Deshaun on the field. And so I think it's interesting. I think that, again, going back to Vegas, he's not going there because Luke Getsy, his former offensive coordinator from Chicago, is there. I don't think that was a good fit between coordinator and quarterback. And so I don't expect them. And so to me, I think the question is, what kind of team can say, hey, we have guys who maybe it's not how they played last year. It's almost the trajectory of, were they going down, which I would say both Jalen and Deshaun took a dip last year. And so if you have a guy like that, like Justin behind them, and again, you would know, I haven't looked quite at the contract, but like, I don't know that he needs that long-term deal right away. Like, he might need to go take a prove himself deal.
See, this is what's fascinating about the Justin Fields stuff, because I think in all of the talk of, you know, Andy has brought it up on the pod that, like, in January, at least, things got legitimately toxic within the Bears fan base of, like, Caleb Williams, Justin Fields, you know, yeah. And, like, I've seen the knockdown drag out fights on Twitter between, like, people in Bears fandom and Bears media about what's the right thing to do here. In a way, though, it almost seems like the way the conversation has evolved since then, when it feels like, some people took a little longer to come to terms with this, but it feels like we've all come to terms with the fact that, like, the Bears are taking Caleb Williams first overall, and Justin Fields is not part of their future plans, period, end of story. Doesn't matter what anybody says, that's what's going to happen. It feels like since we've kind of all accepted that, we've all sort of then started to realize that maybe the team, or at least the fan base that, the people that valued Justin Fields the most were Bears fans, because the rest of the people in the league don't seem to have this same, and like maybe a little bit in the media too, because of the rushing. And we know from a fantasy perspective, shoot, like, if you run the ball, you're a great fantasy quarterback. But you look at like the advanced stats on Justin Fields, he was 28th in success rate last year. He was 21st in EPA per play. He's never cleared 7.0 adjusted yards per attempt. Like, he has one of the biggest sack problems in the NFL. Like, as a, I mean, shoot, you think of some of the logic, like the quote, logical landing spots for Fields. Atlanta, why would a first time head coach, quarterback, you know, I mean, offensive coordinator want to stake their career on Justin Fields? I don't know about that. Like, people talk about Minnesota. I know, one, it's in the division. Two, they don't want it. They're not exploring, like, yeah, let's lose Kirk Cousins and not draft a rookie. Let's take on Justin Fields. Makes no sense. The Steelers, right? Like, if you're Arthur Smith and you know, you're trying to reclaim your career, you're Mike Tomlin, there's pressure on you to win a playoff game. Like, you need to make Justin Fields something he has never become before. And I think that's right, sort of where we're starting to get to this point of the conversation. But to your point, Jory, that opens up a large swath of teams that we have not been considering as landing spots for Fields that, like, might now be realistic.
Yeah, and I think you have to say, okay, who is willing to take a little bit of a risk? Who is willing to maybe piss off their quarterback a little bit? Not a lot, but a little bit. And who is going to say, like, we'll give Justin a little bit of time to sit, because I think also Justin didn't play that much college football. Like, I think it's fair that he could take a little bit more time to get the system under his belt, to like have the degree of experience he had in college and then come to the league where he doesn't have an offensive line, he doesn't have receivers. Like, he wasn't set up to succeed. No. I don't think his career should be over. I think he could still have a really high level career. I think someone just needs to give him like 5 minutes to breathe, understand the system, and like not be asked to like literally be the entire offense every time he steps out on the field. But I think that Howie Roseman in Philly has shown a willingness to be like, okay, Carson Wentz, we're not sure about him. We bring Jalen Hurts in. Yeah, I'm in. I don't care. I'm not concerned about what Carson thinks. I'm not concerned about what the players think. I think if you want a quarterback who can do even, who relies on his center even less, because I'm so fascinated to see what the Eagles can be like without Jason Kelce.
Oh, me
too. I know they've got other offensive linemen who are great. I know they have the best offensive lineman in the world, or best offensive lineman coach in the world. I still think there's questions. Like, it would not surprise me if Howie did something like that. And like, worst comes to worst, you have a trade asset, which a lot of teams believe in also.
I do think, and the Eagles have even said that previously, they want to be a quarterback factory. That actually, that landing spot definitely has me intrigued, because you're right. It's a lot of what I just said, that Justin has not been a productive player from a passing standpoint. Like, some of this is not really all on him. Like, yeah, right. there are clear holes in his game that he has to improve. He has not been set up to success, set up to succeed. Most young quarterbacks don't fail. They are failed. Kevin right. Clark has always said that, and I truly believe that is the case. I mean, there are some guys that were just never going to work. But shoot, you know, Fields ends up in a different spot. Like, This has been a horrible situation for him. And I think a little bit of a moment to take a breath, rather than just, yeah, we're going to throw you out and go be the Patriots starter. And like, good luck, buddy. They have right. no offensive line and no receivers. And we don't really know what that coaching staff is going to be like yet. So that one's a fascinating one. Before we transition to the draft eligible quarterbacks, it would be irresponsible of me to have you on the show and not talk a little bit of Cowboys here, given your past experience covering this team, your experience covering Dak Prescott, who, by the way, I'm just going to say this, Jory, looks fantastic with that goatee. That's a
right?
That is a great look for Dak.
I agree. I think his barber Abel like crushed it on that. It's a good move.
See, I mean, she knows the barber's name. So like, this is why I wanted to ask you about this, because we're not really talking about it right now, because we're talking about Kirk Cousins and Justin Fields and Russell Wilson and all this stuff. But quietly, like, Dak's contract is a huge story looming over this offseason, specifically for this team. So what's your expectation for him this offseason, possible extension and everything to come from that?
Yeah, I think to me, you can't talk about what the Cowboys should do without Dak Prescott without considering a few factors. One, CeeDee Lamb and Micah Parsons contracts, and two, Mike McCarthy and the future of the head coach and sort of the structure that they're running. I think on the contract standpoint, $59 million as a cap hit seemed completely unrealistic, undoable, until the salary cap came out. It was a $30 million bump from last year. And again, as one Cowboys person who I was talking to about this at the combine said to me, well, we thought it'd go up 15 or so. So it's really more of a $15 million bump than a $30 million bump relative to what I expected. But every exec across the league that I talked to projected a lower number for this cap than actually came in. And so if there is a year to take a $59 million cap hit and give yourself some flexibility, it's this year. I mean, think about it, because if not, okay, if it's 15 above what they want, that's what, 45, 44. I mean, it's not as crazy as it sounds, particularly when you still have some of your stars on rookie contracts. I think what you run into is, what's the order of the contracts you want to get done? To me, like, you get CeeDee Lamb done this offseason. CeeDee Lamb was... he was number one in receptions last year in the league, top three in receiving yards and receiving touchdowns. He is reliable. He's a great locker room guy. He has been great with Dak. He's been great with quarterbacks in college. Like, he is someone who you need to lock up. And the only thing you gain by waiting is you're going to pay him more. And so yeah. I think that the Cowboys saw that last time, and they have a lot of deal inertia then. They had a lot of deal inertia now. I definitely think there's some frustration in the front office about some of that, of like, why aren't Jerry and Steven a little more adamant about getting things done? But to me, like, go get CeeDee done. You're just going to pay him more. You know you want him. Mike is an interesting one, because I think that I was talking to a defensive coach from another team about this, and I was just trying to understand, because, like, on one hand, we see Micah's sack numbers, we see what he can do, but it's like, think about the biggest games that they had, the games against San Francisco, the playoff games. Like, what did Micah do in those games? And I had one coach tell me, when the Cowboys are winning, Micah's a Hall of Fame player. When the Cowboys need him most, he's pretty average. And I was asking, I'm like, okay, well, if he's taking off some plays, like people say Chris Jones takes off plays, like I still think he's worth the money. I still think he's helped the Chiefs to Super Bowls. And this coach, I think, wisely told me, Chris Jones takes off some plays, but he makes them when they matter most. Yeah. Micah is not 100% on all plays, but he kind of makes them when they matter least. And I'm not saying least, but he's not making them when they matter most. So I would say, like, you have to decide.
That sounds like the whole Cowboys team. That sounds like the entire.
I know. When I told this to someone in the front office, they started naming some other people on that roster. And I think there's something like culturally. So it's interesting. But all of this is to say, you kind of have like a split in the Cowboys front office. I definitely have people telling me in that front office, like, we believe in Dak. He's a great quarterback. He's the glue of this roster, the glue of the locker room. And no matter what coach we think we'll bring in, we believe they'll want to work with Dak. And you have other people who say, like, well, if we haven't gotten over the hump now, how are we ever going to get over it? And if we can't get over it with him, like, what do we do? One last thing I'll say, and then I want to hear your thoughts on all of this, is I was talking to someone and I was like, okay, so if Mike doesn't work out this year, like, do you think Belichick is like in serious contention next year? And he goes, Bill Belichick would walk into our facilities, see all of the infrastructure around it, basically essentially see the country club mentality, the Dr. Pepper Keurig headquarters that overlooks the practice field, all of that, and be like, I can't coach here. And to me, that is the root of the problem with all of this. To me, it's not about, is Dak Prescott physically what he's able to do? I don't think you're going to find a better quarterback for the Cowboys than Dak Prescott in at least the next 5 years. And so if you're getting rid of him, what is your plan? I think that the issue is this sort of whole Cowboys infrastructure. And so then to me, you get into the point of like, get CD done, decide if you want to do Dak now or in a year, because I think that you're not going to find someone better. And I think that Dak has shown he's willing to bet on himself contractually before. And so I don't think he's going to like hold out if he doesn't get the contract. I have questions about whether you should keep Micah long term. That might be for another show, but I think it's really interesting. So with all of that, I'm curious your thoughts, Matt.
Well, it feels like the ethos of that conversation that we just had here, because I'm with you. And I always say, I used to tell people this, that we're Cowboys fans, about like Sean Payton, when that was a big, like, oh, well, someday Sean Payton will be our head coach. I'm like, Sean Payton, the guy that's been in New Orleans forever, won Super Bowl. Like, I mean, number one, relax. Number two, he is not, he's similar to what you just said with Belichick. Like, he was never going to sign up, in my opinion, it was never going to sign up for the whole like Jerry Jones experience. Because look at what's going on in Denver right now. Like, that is Sean Payton's show. Okay. Yeah. Like, in Dallas, it's never going to be Sean Payton's show. So, And I think Belichick similarly, would see all this nonsense, all this Cowboys baloney, and be like, yeah, I'm all set on that. Thanks. I'll go ahead and take another job. So it feels like that the general NFL public has been a little unrealistic about like who the Cowboys could court because of all of this stuff. And to me, it's just like, again, the ethos of that whole conversation is just be normal, like be grown up here. Like, let's be adults and like, yeah, let's get our business done. Extend your clear-cut number one receiver. I think there might not be a more, I mean, look, there's all kinds of great receivers in the NFL, but he is so quarterback friendly, is CeeDee Lamb. Like, Dak Prescott gets hurt, or you do eventually want to move on from him, he's the perfect guy to,
no matter who your quarterback is.
That's why it's like, oh yeah, Cooper Rush is in there, well, CeeDee Lamb's still gonna have monster games, because like, you just need to be baseline competent to be like, I can hit CeeDee Lamb when he's wide open on a slant route or a crossing route, like, because he's that type of receiver. So get that done. I think you'd figure out what you want with Dak, and you probably just want to extend Dak. Like, don't leave this whole, like, don't make this a talking point all offseason, but it just does feel like the Cowboys are doomed.
They love talking points.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like, grow up. Be a grown up and just, like, get your business done.
Yeah, they're literally doing the opposite. Like, they didn't even meet with Dak's agent at the combine. Like, they're not making a lot of deals. Like, they don't have any running backs. Like, again, I don't know. But it's super interesting, because I think going back to what we were talking about with Justin Fields, to me, when you look at the running back market right now, the reason it is so screwed up is because the supply of at least serviceable, if not elite running backs, far outpaces the demand. When you look at the quarterback market, there are not enough quarterbacks. There are not 32. I don't even know if there's like 25 or 20 quarterbacks who you could feel good about your long-term future with. And so I think if you have one of those guys who you know other teams would want, like that's always a good benchmark. If you have a player who other teams would be like, eager to sign ASAP for several reasons, you should probably sign that guy.
All right, let's transition. We'll come back to the draft quarterbacks, but because you just brought up running backs, and I think that's a great way of setting the table here, supply and demand. This is a stacked free agent class of names, right? And I think that's an important thing too. Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler, Tony Pollard, a ton of others. Like DeAndre Swift, Zach Moss had some nice moments. Like it's a great crop of free agent running backs, but in your franchise tag deadline winners and losers, which by the way, Jory, I mean, you know, it's the off season when your editor is like, let's get a winners and losers piece on the docket here. You wrote running backs are on a two tag deadline streak of losing. So again, what you just said, that note, how do you expect this market to play out of a guy? Like, I mean, shoot, the people listening to this fantasy podcast want to know, Jory, like what is going on with this running back market? What can we expect with some of these players that people have been starting and relying on for years?
Yeah, I think the problem is that when you talk to coaches and execs, they say, we believe that offensive line and scheme are more worth investing in right now than a specific running back. And I had one agent walk me through. I wish I had my napkin with me. I felt very J.K. Rowling style taking notes on a napkin as an agent is like giving me this like salary cap lesson. It was really fun. I'll send you a picture after this. But
what do you think? What do you think is going to do bigger numbers, that article or Harry Potter? I mean, come on, like that article is definitely doing bigger numbers than that. Oh,
absolutely,
book series.
Absolutely. But I think that what they were saying is like it's all about replacement costs, and if you can get instead of paying one, again, if you have Christian McCaffrey, it's a different situation because he's an offensive weapon, he's a playmaker, and he's basically a receiver too. But if you have a specific running back and you're talking about how you get the run game, all these coaches are saying, it's not that we value the run game less, it's that we believe there are different routes to get it. We believe in a division of labor of one guy's blocking, one guy's your like goal line guy, another guy's your explosive guy, like Tony Pollard and Zeke when they were at their best. Like Tony Pollard was who the Cowboys kept last year, but Zeke had 12 touchdowns in his last year as a Cowboy. Like he still had a lot in the tank. It's what do you want and how are you going to pay guys? And then teams say, well, like we believe offensive linemen and the way that we create holes is actually more important for a run game. I mean, again, even someone like Christian McCaffrey, who was like one of the few running backs who almost every team would still say, let's pay him. Think about what the San Francisco blocking scheme is doing. They have like 10 other guys on the field blocking for him at all time because everyone's just blocking. And so I think that it will be really difficult for these running backs to get what they think they deserve. And last year they all got tagged, which kind of suppressed the market. But this year none of them got tagged. So I don't think any of them are making $10 million. And I think when you look at what Miles Sanders did, and also the fact that like he left Philly's offensive line and all of a sudden he didn't have the same production, like it's not going to help. Because one guy I talked to from Carolina was like, I think we kind of screwed up the running back market for everyone. And I'm like, maybe. But teams also feel like we can get guys out of college who can do enough.
And I think like we talk about quarterbacks and how I said quarterbacks are often they don't fail. They are failed. I think team building now has so much come down to like, when do you get the quarterback? Do you drop them in when the rest of the roster is ready, or do you get them and then build within and around them and all that stuff? And there's competing philosophies there. I've almost started to think about this with the running back position. And you just made a great point about this. And I had this conversation with Austin Eckler on our final Eckler's Edge episode like a month ago, was that I have changed my thoughts on this when you look at a team like the Lions that basically like they had all that stuff figured out. They had a scheme figured out. They had an offensive line figured out. So, you know, I think the temptation, especially from like the analytics bros, is like, well, you can just ignore running back, whatever. But they go out and they pay a free agent. Like they paid David Montgomery pretty similar money to Miles Sanders. Nobody's talking about that David Montgomery contract while we're all talking about the Miles Sanders contract.
Right.
You know, nobody's giving that a weird look. And then they not only do they do that, then they get Jahmyr Gibbs with the 12th overall pick, and people hated that pick. But it's like they were able to take something that was already like solid and truly weaponize it. I don't know that I see a spot around the league for these. Maybe Houston, but their run game was terrible last year. And like, how much of that was running back and how much of that was all the other things that you're talking about there? I'm not sure I know the answer to that, but there's not a spot around the league that I see that's like, yeah, you know what? We are one running back away from really true. Maybe Baltimore, actually, now that I think about
that's
it.
That's a good one.
But there's not many spots around the league where I think like they're able to do that. We have the baseline. Let's weaponize it type of thing with these free agents.
Right. I think if I were playing fantasy and I was saying like which running backs to go to, I would say who's got the right schemes and who's got the best offensive line. And then do you have someone? To me, like the best way to have a strong run game in today's NFL, this is what I think teams say, is get a really strong offensive line and then draft a good running back. I don't think teams are going to stop drafting running backs. Now, they're not going to draft them like Saquon Barkley and Ezekiel Elliott high, but they're still going to be first and second round running backs that we continue to see, because then you get a guy on a cost controlled deal for 4 or 5 years. And so I think that if you can do that with the offensive line, then you have the consistency. They get to know each other, but you're not paying top dollar, and you can pay your top dollar to the center and the guards and the tackles who are setting those edges.
Maybe Philly.
Right. You know, I was thinking like, that, but then like, does DeAndre Swift kind of like call into question that? But I do think when you look at, you still have Jalen Hurts, you'll still have, again, Jeff Stoutland will make sure the offensive line is good, even if it's not Jason Kelce great. And Kellen Moore, like he's schemed for a run game. Kellen Moore, what he did with Ezekiel Elliott and Tony Pollard in 2022, like I think if you can get sort of that 1-2 punch again in Philly, then I would trust both of their running backs.
I think the Eagles and the Ravens are fascinating because they're two teams that don't necessarily the Ravens are a little bit different, but the Eagles certainly do not invest big money or big draft resources typically in running backs. But I wonder if, because this is going to be another depressed market, maybe we see something there, or, you know, maybe they go with the like a Tony Pollard. There's coaching familiarity there. I mentioned that on the matchmaking shows. Zach Moss, right? Like he's a guy that could be, I think he's a system fit. I think he's a scheme fit. But at the same time, you know, could they end up just kicking the can down the road? I don't know. So let's move it back to the college quarterbacks here as we start to kind of wind down a little bit. What are Caleb Williams? I know you wrote about him specifically recently. We've also got Drake May, Jaden Daniels, and then J.J. McCarthy, who, like, you can't talk to somebody that went to the combine and not hear them say like, oh yeah, J.J. McCarthy, he's a riser. So where does this draft quarterback class kind of sit right now?
Yeah, I think first of all, it's interesting. So we've seen for a while now a continuing trend of guys not throwing at the combine if they're a top prospect. And then we had Caleb Williams take the next step and say, I'm not even giving you guys my medicals. And I was talking to one team who was drafting in the 20s, and they were like pissed off about this. And I was thinking like, why do they care? It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, why do you care?
Like,
you're not drafting him.
I was like, you're not even close to drafting. And this is a team drafting in the second half of the first round who has a quarterback in place. So like, none of this is a question. And part of it is they were just being traditional. Part of it is they were kind of making the point of like, okay, you take the Trey Lance type situation. They traded up to get him. They wanted that to work. It didn't work. They had another quarterback. Is the next team who takes the Trey Lance type person going to be as willing to take him if they don't have the baseline medical? And I think that's an interesting point. I don't think it's going to change Caleb or his dad's mind, but I do think it's an interesting case for like why you give everyone your medicals, when I was previously like, I kind of get why you don't want 32 teams having all this personal information that could be leaked and is like 8-9 hours of them prodding you when you don't have to do it. So I do think that's an interesting point. In terms of McCarthy, going back to who's throwing, like there's a recency bias. There's a what have you done lately for me bias in the NFL. And I think that I think he's going to be a first rounder, and I think he's going to go higher than we thought he'd go like 3 months ago. But I think that this is in large part a matter of like he worked out at the combine when no one else did. So people are talking about him more than they're talking about everyone else. So to me, I will be more interested. Like, I think it'll be a better benchmark of where he actually goes after pro days and after we start sort of like even the playing field for how we're looking at these quarterbacks against one another to see what they want from him. But I do think that just the way you hear about not only how he can play, but how he can process and all of that, there are certain like Sean Payton, Kevin O'Connell types who want a certain type of mind at the line of scrimmage and want a certain willingness to like take all of that on that will be really interested in him. And then I'll go back to like what Daniel Jeremiah, who I think is one of the best in the business at what he does with the draft analysis, said before the combine, we were on a call and he was like, essentially, yeah, it would be crazy if we saw four quarterbacks go in the top five positions, but I don't think that is out of the top realm. And what I love, I think Jeremiah is the perfect example. He'll always make a top 50 board and then a first round mock. And they're not in the same order because the reality is, one, teams need different positions, but two, teams get more anxious about different positions. And so let's say McCarthy ends up going to five because someone's trading up to get him, like a Las Vegas or whoever it is. It's not necessarily that he's the fifth best. He's not going to be the fifth best prospect out there.
Period.
Yeah, he's not. But people get anxious and like, you need to get quarterback right. So I think that him moving up is partly because of him, partly because of the conversations we're having now, which I think will sort of like even out during pro day, and partly just because there's so much anxiety about getting the right quarterback and a lot of teams who need quarterback this year, that there's sort of this mad dash race that's making everyone panic.
Nothing is more anxiety inducing to a team than when you don't have a quarterback, because, you know, then there's pressure from the fan base, there's pressure within the building, and then there's pressure down from ownership of like,
right,
all right, what are we doing? What are we doing at quarterback? Like, what's the plan here? So if you can sell those teams you mentioned, perfect ones to say, like Denver, Minnesota, like, I don't think you mentioned those two head coaches by accident, because those are the teams that would likely come up in that fifth overall. Like, and again, I keep telling you, people that want the Chargers to take one of these great receivers in this draft, start spiritually, mentally, physically preparing yourself for them to trade down or take an offensive lineman if they stick and pick. Like, I just, listeners of this podcast, be prepared for that. So I do like that, the whole notion here that we're going to get one of these teams that's anxious enough to make that bet on McCarthy that, you know, I was reading Nate Tice's breakdown of him and just like how it's so easy to study McCarthy because like you're through those games like this because he's not doing a lot of throwing, you know,
right.
It's like, so this is, he's not a ready-made, like, I mean, there's obviously some pro-style system that he ran there in Michigan because of his head coach, but he's a guy that might be best served, like, by developing behind it. Like, on a free agent matchmaking show, I said, all right, I'm putting Joe Flacco with the Vikings, and, like, he's going to start the first three, four games, something like that, because there's some crossover between Stefanski's system and what O'Connell does from just, we're taking shots off play action. Like, but that's the kind of thing I think you have to be prepared for if your team drafts McCarthy, like, to sort of be in kind of, like, the hate zone of, like, people are going to hate that pick. You know, college football fans are going to make fun of you for that pick, whatever. Draft analysts probably going to make fun of you for that pick. And then you might have to be prepared for him to develop a little bit, too.
Yeah, and I think, again, another thing that's interesting about McCarthy is just there's so many guys in this class who have so much experience that, like, if you don't have as much experience, if you haven't been making those throws at the same level that the other guys coming out is, like, that's going to be held against you as strong, but factored in as not too strong. And so I think that, again, we've seen with the Brock Purdy model, like, experience at the college level matters. Like, the degree of mental reps and, like, muscle memory you have coming into the league matters. And rushing guys is often not, again, Jordan Love coming out is not what Jordan Love is now. There's so much benefit to guys not starting right away, particularly if they didn't have all of that experience coming in. And so I think that if you're a fan base, like, it feels frustrating, but, like, when you get 2-3 years down the line, I think you'll be really glad you did it.
Yeah, Minnesota, if you're going to do this, you're going to do the Joe Flacco into, you know, J.J. McCarthy thing. Talk about another team that just needs to get their business done and sign Justin Jefferson to an extension. Pay him his money so that he's comfortable with this, like, all right, we're losing Kirk Cousins, but I'm going to give you 35 million reasons to feel pretty good about maybe having a weird season with, you know, no disrespect to Joe Flacco, who pumped a lot of production to Amari Cooper last year, but, like, you know, this is all hypothetical. So, again, I think just be an adult about that one first.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought up Joe Flacco. One, I think what we saw Kevin O'Connell do with Josh Dobbs right when he got there suggests that, like, Kevin O'Connell, like, everyone has the same name in the NFL, like Kevin Stefanski. I always think every NFL head coach is named Mike. I guess we've got some Kevins going in there. They're literally all the same.
Got Kyles.
Yeah, Kyle. Yeah. Like, there's like three names that you should name your kid if you want them to coach in the NFL. But I do think that, like, Kevin O'Connell would similarly, like, totally be able to maximize Joe Flacco and play to his strengths rather than his weaknesses. I also just think he's so fun. Like, I voted for the first time this past year on all, like, the MVP, Comeback Player of the Year, all that type of stuff awards.
Shout out.
And I voted for Flacco for Comeback Player of the Year. And I saw Flacco's quote and it was like, what did I come back from, being old and on the couch? And I'm like, that is exactly what you came back from.
Yeah, bro.
And I remember, like, all the group text men are lighting up, like, how did DeMar Hamlin not win? He literally came back to life. And I'm like, no one is saying what Damar Hamlin did is not inspiring. Like, for sure he's inspiring. For sure I'm grateful he's alive. For sure that was terrifying when that happened. But the question is, did you come back in the game of football? And Damar Hamlin did not. That, like, fake punt situation that they tried to have him do, which, by the way, I think was in the playoffs after we voted, like, that's not coming back. If that guy, if he played an average season, for sure, but he barely played. And so I think that Joe Flacco is such a fun story.
One of the best lines that any NFL writer, football analyst said all season long was our colleague Charles McDonald, who right after that play happened, the Damar Hamlin play, like, I think he just tweeted out, Sean McDermott thinks this is a Disney movie, because that was exactly how he approached that situation. And that is, I mean, of course, it was Charles McDonald, you know, the brilliant mind of Charles.
Yeah, so, CNX the best.
All right, last thing here before I let you go, Joy, because I know you're busy, you got stuff to do. We're not going to, I don't need to go down like all these wide receivers and the names or anything, but I'm just curious from a wide view perspective, wide receiver view perspective here.
There you go.
Yeah, see what I did there.
A reception, perception, all the good things continue.
Yeah, all the good things continue. Business is booming, baby, for reception, perception. But because again, this is stuff I think about all the time because this is the position I study the most.
Yeah.
Like, I'm curious to your sources, people you're talking to, like, one, this is supposed to be a super strong draft class of receivers. And I definitely think the guys at the top are worth it. I'm still kind of doing my homework and figuring out like the second and third tier of these prospects, if I really kind of share that view. So, you know, put that on pause for a second. But the perceived strength of this draft class, does that impact team spending on veterans at this position this year? And honestly, like in the future, like we talked about the running back position, how that market has changed. Is that something that's sort of percolating in NFL circles? Because it hasn't necessarily been reflected on the way teams treat veterans at the position yet. But I'm curious if that ever happens because of just how many good receivers we get coming out of college football all year long.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that I would say, first of all, if you're a team in need of a receiver, are you a team who is a receiver away from contending this year, or a team who wants a receiver to build a Bryce Young, like to sort of like support someone over the next 3 to 5 years? I think that will impact the question here. And then I also think the question is your receiver in house like a top guy, a CeeDee Lamb, a Jamar Chase, all of that? Or is it someone who's sort of like good, but you feel like you can replace it? Because I do think the replacement cost of a receiver is different than the replacement cost of a running back. I think it's hard. I think there is more of a separation between the top 10, 15, if not even 20 than everyone else. Whereas running backs, it's like there's two or three guys you feel like you can't replace and everyone else you feel like you can. But I think also the difference is like you need a lot of receivers. And so you can, I think in an ideal world, you have like a top guy who you're willing to pay and then pair him with a top prospect. Cause then you have like both of them who can play off each other, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. I think another thing that you should look at is every year we see who gets tagged from the league. And typically we see the teams who are a little bit concerned about this. I mean, we have Michael Pittman Jr. who got tagged. We have T. Higgins who got tagged, and we had one other receiver get tagged, didn't we?
Well, Evans was re-signed, but
yeah, Evans was re-signed. Yeah. But I mean, I think when you see that, it's like first we saw the running backs all get tagged, then we saw the tight ends get tagged, and now it's sort of like the receivers, or I guess tight ends, then running backs and receivers. And so I think some of that speaks to like if teams care to keep guys around. But I think there's still going to be a market for paying top receivers, because I just think that like as this league becomes increasingly a passing game, that's what you're going to have to rely on more. And that's what you're going to feel like you can replace less easily than the running backs.
Yeah, with running backs, there's only one of them on the field, like you said. With receivers, I mean, at this point, everybody's in 11 personnel for the most part. Certain teams, not as much, but some of these teams are in 11 personnel, three receivers on the field. Like, you need multiple guys. And that's why I still feel like, you know, a guy like Calvin Ridley, who has kind of had an up and down season, I still think he's going to get a lot of money because he's still a guy that can play and could end up getting kind of that big contract. But Jory, this was fantastic. We covered a ton of ground on this show. So many whispers, so many rumors. Appreciate you doing this. And we definitely got to have you back after this. This was the first time. So we'll definitely do this again. But I appreciate you, Jory.
Thanks so much, Matt. This is super fun. You do a great job. And I'm excited for the next time.
Absolutely. Maybe even in Indy. You know,
I would say let's do it before Indy and let's absolutely get you to Indy. And every time I come back, let's remind everyone that we're getting you to Indy. I can
be
very persistent when I had a couple of conversations with the bosses this week where I was being like pretty blunt and persistent. I was like, they're going to tell the company, like, we need to get this sassy woman out of here.
Oh my gosh. Add that to the add that to the list of things we need to talk about off podcast, Jory. All right, that is going to do it for us today. Make sure you're following all of Jory's work here at Yahoo Sports. Subscribe on the Zero Blitz podcast feed. She's got a great show, which she's got to do here very soon. I've taken up way too much of her time with Jason Fitz over there. And make sure you're following her on Twitter at Jory Epstein. Next week, it's going to be hectic, baby. We're going to be here to react to it all. John Daigle, friend of the show, joins the show on Tuesday evening to react to all of the first wave of the legal tampering. I can't believe I have to say that again. Legal tampering in free agency news. Until then, we're out.